You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Thursday, December 22nd, 2022. My name is Emma Vigeland, in for Sam Steeder, and this is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Karen Levy, professor at Cornell University and author of Data Driven, Truckers, Technology, and the New Workplace Surveillance. Meanwhile, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky addressed Congress in person yesterday, his first overseas trip since the Russian invasion. This comes as Russia has announced its intention to increase its troop size. No end in sight for this barbarity. Mitch McConnell thought the government funding negotiations were going a bit too smoothly, so Senate Republicans led by Mike Lee are now holding it hostage over, naturally, Biden, trying to get Biden to keep Title 42 in place on the border. But Richie Neal's pet provision that gives private retirement accounts less oversight and less taxation? No problem. Same with Boeing's goodie that they got after millions of dollars in lobbying. The omnibus bill would waive a safety deadline for airplanes that was supposed to be met next week. Another week where jobless claims have ticked up, so the Fed's labor discipline is starting to work. The IRS did not follow the rules and didn't audit Trump during his first 2 years. But they did so for every year of Obama and Biden so far. Something to note.
These agencies, it's the deep state. They're all out to get me.
Except in this instance.
They just hate Republicans. It's unfair.
They're trying to make me look lazy. Like I didn't submit my taxes to them. Sean Hannity was questioned under oath in Dominion Voting Systems' $1.6 billion lawsuit against Fox News. And guess what? He said that he, quote, did not believe some of the election fraud claims made on his show. Whoops.
Rhino.
In Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu is back, baby. And he's announced that he's formed a government which includes a coalition with the far-right settler nationalist religious Zionist party. Although, frankly, they're just saying the quiet part out loud.
Fresh off of his appearances on Jordan Peterson and Dave Rubin's show.
Oof.
It's what you do before you form a far-right government.
Yeah. And lastly, U.S. life expectancy has dropped to its lowest level in 25 years due to COVID and overdose deaths.
You don't think it has people...
The flu, I mean, sorry.
I was going to make a mask is stopping oxygen from getting to people's brains.
Yeah, it was not the face diapers that did it. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Or a Majority Report, as you call it. The final one of the year. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. We've got a great show for you today. Sam is out, as he is on Thursdays. But tomorrow, we're having a very special show. It's going to be Calls and Clips. That's what I call it. Calls and Clips show. Matt's favorite. But we will be taking your calls tomorrow throughout the program and doing clips. It'll be the final live show of the year. But next week, we'll have our best ofs. And I'm excited for that because we aggregated some our best for the year.
Yeah. Also, a pro tip, if you are going to be one of the folks who is going to like get on the phone lines early tomorrow, write a few points down.
Right. Okay. There we go. Yeah. Just Matt saying do your homework.
Some helpful advice.
Yeah.
And with the utmost level of respect, with if your impersonation is good, that's fine. But really, really make sure it's good.
And if you're a libertarian, please just call in earlier.
Yes, they call in
earlier in the day.
And hang up. If it gets to like 2 o'clock, just hang up.
Yes, please. Please. That's your Christmas or holiday gift for us. With that said, I can't believe that Kevin Brady has found his niche here, Republican representative, and that he's sticking with it. I guess he saw that people responded with indignance and, frankly, mockery when he was speaking publicly about Donald Trump's tax returns and saying, this is a real slippery slope. What could it lead to? Supreme Court justices' tax returns being released? Oh, let me clutch my pearls. I would love that. I would love a lot more information on our Supreme Court justices. As I like to call them, the high priests of America. They feel that they're above reproach. They have no ethics standards. You have a situation where a Supreme Court justice can just choose, like, NBD, I'm going to not recuse myself from a case that involves my literal wife, an organization that she has organizations that she has affiliations with. There should be some recourse for that, but there is not. And yet, Kevin Brady, despite that being the case, decided to not just say how he felt to the press about protecting Supreme Court justices from oversight at all costs. Here he is saying it on the House floor.
The president makes their tax returns public or not. Today is not the law. And while I would recommend it for all, the truth of the matter is, at the end of the day, this is political targeting. It can be applied not just to the president, but to every American. And I am worried that it is not just public officials at risk. It is private citizens. It could be supporters. It could be business or labor leaders. It could be the Supreme Court that some have sought to delegitimize. That's our concern here. This is why we are fighting this fight as Republicans, to protect the privacies of every American, to make sure they are not targeted by partisans in Congress. Now,
that is hilarious to me. I mean, the only way that you can really sell it is by saying that it's going to happen to everyday Americans. Everyday Americans understand that their tax information is in the hands of the government because they do their TurboTax in April.
Yeah, and if Congress wants
over.
It, they'll get it.
Yeah, it's not that hard. That's the thing. The reason that we want tax returns public for public officials is because we pay their bills.
This is like when they're trying to say, like, if they can shadow ban the president, they can shadow ban you. It's like, no, we all know we get shadow banned all the time. The fact that the president can get shadow banned for saying, like, when the looting shooting starts, means that he actually is, like, sometimes under the same sort of level of scrutiny that we are sometimes. So, like, this sort of thing where, oh, it might attack. It's an attack, or it might delegitimize the Supreme Court if we know about their tax returns. That's a Supreme Court problem.
Yeah, I mean, there's no like, there's no trickle down oversight.
Privacy.
Because, yeah, that's not how it works. He's trying to frame it like that, but the problem, and I think most people know this, is that the people of the top don't have the same standards that the rest of us do, and so when they are making decisions that are going to affect, say, I don't know, half the population, when they decide to overturn a Roe v. Wade, when they're making decisions soon about millions of Americans, if they're going to get student debt relief, and they're going to side with Republican states that clearly have no standing in their lawsuit, I might want to know if they have any interests financially in organizations or affiliated organizations that are pushing that kind of case. If you have somebody named Brett Kavanaugh who has some significant baseball ticket debt and that got paid off, and we don't really know much about that, I would like to know. These are things that most people actually want. There isn't enough of a bootlicking population for the Supreme Court, which is at a historic low in terms of polling in the way that the American people view the job that they're doing. There is not a constituency out there that wants them to be shielded from accountability. He just has to pretend like it's going to affect all of us. Because what he really is just doing is fortifying the castle walls and putting more alligators in the moat. And then he's pretending like this is for the everyman. I mean, it's the oldest trick in the book for Republicans.
It's weird about him saying this publicly, though, because he said, like, said this right before they went into a closed session, so this is meant for a public audience. Clearly, he thinks that, like, he's getting something by putting out of it, and I think our guess is correct. He's trying to get sort of the Supreme Court and the people who have moved so much money to make the Supreme Court the way it is, start moving money to head this off. But, like, it is extremely important that we know, particularly if we have these sort of, like, justices basically above the law, we should at least, and given lifetime terms for as long as they want, we should know about that. Because, like, the Brett Kavanaugh debts thing, one person's debts is another person's asset.
Mm-hmm.
And they have an asset in Brett Kavanaugh in that. And, like, that it's disgusting that we
just
don't
ask creditors
understand
how
that.
They feel about inflation, and then you'll understand what debt as an asset, yeah. Right? Sorry to cut you off.
No, that's all I have to say.
Yeah, I mean, it makes you wonder who he's connected to on the Supreme Court, where he's getting his marching orders from on this front, and what they actually know about Brett Kavanaugh and Clarence Thomas specifically, who was, and I saw a piece in Slate today where they were saying that the January 6th committee really dropped the ball on including language about Ginni Thomas in their final report on this, and I'd agree.
Well, of course, the final reports, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the final report is crafted by, there are Republicans on that panel, Liz Cheney included. And that's the limitations of what they've provided, is that they haven't gone far enough to connect Trump and the insurrection to the Republican Party broadly, and part of that's because they have Republicans on the panel, and that's what they do.
The other problem here is this is also a message to Democrats saying, hey, if you do this, we're going to come after you and use this new weapon that you've created. And I think that might scare, I worry that might scare some Democrats off. And I would just say, hold the line, because
we know which side is more exposed. I mean, we have Nancy Pelosi.
Both sides are so exposed, which is why I'm worried about this actually having some sort of ability to stop this without actually knowing where the votes are on it. But
I don't even have, I don't think the tax returns have any value, like, for Trump, for Democrats politically, really, because this, we've known that he's like a tax cheat his entire life. And he used that effectively against Hillary Clinton when she was using it to target him in the primary, or not in the primary, I'm sorry, in the debate. And she was like, well, he has cheated on his taxes, essentially. And he said, well, that's because I'm smart. Americans don't like taxes, and they feel like, you know, the rich get out of paying taxes, so I should get out of paying taxes to a degree. I mean, it's not everybody, but the point is that it's not an effective attack on him. People like the idea of, like, oh, I could get around this. Cool.
We should still force the tax returns out.
I agree. I just think the political value is being overstated. The point that I think is most important about this is that it shows how little oversight people in power have generally, and particularly the Supreme Court, which Kevin Brady is fixated on. They have no ethics laws. They have nothing that's actually a check on their power. It's lifetime appointments. They are acting with impunity, and they're political actors that are, by their own actions, delegitimizing the Supreme Court. It's not some outside force that's delegitimizing the Supreme Court. It's the way that they behave and operate on a daily basis. And yeah, part of that is because we have no structure in place to hold them accountable. I would love some structure in place to hold them accountable, starting with their tax returns and starting with an ability to recall them, impeach them, get them out of office more easily, in the case of Clarence Thomas in particular. And let's start there. That's what I am riled up about with this fixation on the Supreme Court. But
also, Dem SCOTUS justices should resign so we can put younger people.
Yes, Ian Millhiser has a great piece out in Vox saying, and I saw some of the responses to it. People are like, oh, "How dare he!" But saying that Sotomayor and Kagan should consider resigning because they're in their 60s. They should
do it.
Yeah, if. if the Republican Party is going to put, you know, tween Supreme Court justices on, and I kid, but they're getting younger and younger, and there's a reason for it. There's no reason that the Democrats should unilaterally disarm.
You either have to deal with the structural reasons that the Republicans are doing that through, I would say, removing the Supreme from the Supreme Court and make it just like a, and just, I mean, that's the real problem is, like, this is an institution that isn't meant to be responsible to all of us.
Yeah.
It was given to us by slave owners, and, like, we've slowly tried to adapt it, but it's ludicrous. And ultimately, like, we just can't have it as a co-equal branch where these people are granted lifetime appointments. Like, we just can't do that. I mean, I'm all for all the reform things, but this just doesn't work.
Yeah. All right. Well, we have, we're going to take a quick break soon, but we have a quick word from one of our favorite sponsors, Sunset Lake CBD. I use it daily now. I'm really into it. I use the melatonin CBD tincture pretty much every night, and then sometimes the gummies if I'm having a harder time falling asleep. But they really are great. And there is a sale happening right now, starting yesterday, ending on Sunday, December 31st, right before midnight. So up until the end of the year, all new hemp smokables, flowers, and smalls are buy one, get one free. Mix and match cultivars to find your new favorite. No promo code is needed, but you can use the Majority Report one if you so choose. I was skeptical of CBD before, or CBD, because I if you just go to the corner store or whatever, it's trash, and there's no real oversight on the actual product. But Sunset Lake changed my entire perspective on using CBD. It really is a great product. It's releasing its new 2022 hemp flower. The cultivars you know and love will be joined by Candy Kush, a hybrid great for helping you ease into bed. Sunset Lake CBD is a majority employee-owned business that pays a minimum wage of $20 an hour. Their farm uses regenerative farming practices like cover cropping, crop rotation, and grows all of their hemp without the use of harmful pesticides or synthetic fertilizers. And as I say, you know, you can feel it. Starting today through the end of the year, all of Sunset Lake CBD's hemp flower will be buy one, get one. Mix and match cultivars to find your new favorite. No promo code needed. Again, visit sunsetlakecbd.com to try these amazing new cultivars and take advantage of this sale while it lasts. It ends on December 31st. All right, we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will be joined by Karen Levy. We are back, and we are joined now by Karen Levy, professor at Cornell University, author of Data Driven, Truckers, Technology, and the New Workplace Surveillance. Karen, thanks so much for coming on today.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Of course. So we hear a lot about a trucker shortage in this country. I find the phrasing a bit curious, given the fact that these are human beings, and you write about this too, how they're basically treated as infrastructure despite being people. But we don't hear much about the reasons behind said shortage. I guess let's start there, and then we can dive into some of the history that got us to this point and the very, very terrifying point in terms of surveillance and treatment that we're at right now.
Yeah, I mean, a trucker will be very quick to inform you that there is not a trucker shortage in the United States. What there is a wage shortage. There are plenty of folks who are equipped to do the work, who have their commercial driver's licenses, you know, who would like to do the work. But the way we compensate truckers in this country and the degree of kind of infrastructure we afford them to do their work, like that's insufficient. So the churn rate in trucking is really high. In some segments of the industry, it's like 100% a year. Like every trucker leaves their job every year on average, for some kinds of firms. And so it's just the kind of job that like chews you up and spits you out in many ways. Like truckers make about 47K per year. In 1980, they made about 110K in today's dollars. So like their wages have just tanked, and they're like away from home all the time and like can't make doctor's appointments. And, you know, like their work is really difficult and unsafe. And it's been equated sometimes to sweatshop labor in terms of, you know, the amount of hours they work and the wages that they make and the risk that they put themselves at. And so all of those things like are not recipes for a lot of people wanting to stay in those jobs for a long period of time.
And the reason that the wages have fallen to that degree, I mean, you can trace them back to very concrete decisions in our history, to unions being undercut basically since the 1970s, and you write about that. Do you mind telling that story a bit?
Yeah, sure. So trucking has in the United States has been formally deregulated since 1980. It was like one of the industries, you know, one among a few, but like one of the big industries, you know, for which there was this big deregulatory push in 1980. And so what that meant is that, you know, up until that point, the federal government played a much more active role in setting rates in the industry and creating barriers to entry for new companies. So like you had to go through a whole process if you wanted to be a trucking company. And in 1980, they were like, we're not doing that anymore. This is just a pure market. And so what that meant was like several things, right? A bunch of companies went out of business. Rates plummeted. So there was like kind of a race to the bottom in terms of cost. And the other thing that sort of got competed away was truckers' wages, right? So that's when we started to see this like crazy marked decline in how much money truckers were making. And it's been pretty stagnant. Like that's been kind of just what trucking has looked like for about the last 40 years. Like wages, you would think, right? Like oftentimes we would sort of intuitively assume that wages would go up if there's such a shortage, but that actually hasn't really happened in trucking. The solution has been to like come up with kind of fresh meat. So, you know, to the extent that there has been a policy, like that we tried to address these problems via policy, the way we've done that is like by trying to subsidize new driver training and like get more people into the industry, but not necessarily to deal with some of the things in the industry that make it such an unlivable job.
Yeah, and I want to get into some of those tweaks in a bit, but I just wanted to underscore the precipitous decline in union membership among truckers and how that you can just see that in dollar figures. And people associate trucking with unions, I think, from old tropes about it and old realities, but union membership is way, way down since the period that you describe.
Yeah, it's in like the best numbers I can find are like low to mid single digits. Like, and I've had a lot of conversations with truckers, and I have yet to find a trucker who was like gung ho about unions. You know, a lot of folks, even if you ask them about unionization, truckers are like very autonomous people. Like, a lot of them got into the industry because they didn't want somebody looking over their shoulder, which we'll see becomes ironic because now a lot of people are looking over their shoulder, right? They didn't really. You know, they're not crazy about kind of the structures of organizations or of government. They just want to do their work in their own way. And so unionization, you're right, like it used to be, like the Teamsters were essentially a trucking union, you know, in the heyday of, you know, like the 70s. But today there is just very negligible in long haul, in like the long haul segment, there's pretty negligible union membership. In delivery driving, it's a bit higher, right? Like your FedEx and UPS drivers, there you see a bit more, or in port trucking, like some of the more specialized industries. But the folks who are going over the road for like hundreds of miles at a time, it has like a very, very small role.
The hundreds of miles of at a time that you described there, I mean, one, this is essential to the functioning of the economy as we have it, you know, constructed. And we just saw essentially Biden participate in union busting or at least he's strike. I shouldn't say union busting. That's the wrong word. But he broke the strike for the the rail workers. And that was because it's so essential to the economy. Right. And that the workers in the rail industry got the short end of the stick there because they were unable to get what they bargained for. And it's kind of a similar dynamic with truckers in that they are essential, and yet there has not been any progress in the past few decades in giving them what they need to live lives mm-hmm. that are healthy, to get paid and compensated for what they provide for the economy. And it's gone really the opposite way.
Yeah, I think I completely agree. I mean, we like to talk a big game, especially maybe post-pandemic, about essential workers and how valuable they are and how much we appreciate them. But as you point out, right, truckers are like as about as essential as it gets, like in all circumstances, right? Like truckers have this saying, if you got it, a truck brought it. Like basically everything you have, like everything you're wearing, everything in the room you're in right now, like there's a very, very strong chance that everything in that room was on a truck at some point, right? Like they just touch everything. And, you know, that people sometimes talk about like the digital age and how it changes work. But like, if anything, trucking is more essential in the digital age because we now all expect our like Amazon Prime deliveries very quickly. We want to know where everything is. We've come to expect things, you know, like when we want them, like on demand. And, you know, somebody pays the price for that. And as you point out, you know, not only I think have we not kind of met the call in terms of the wages we give these folks, but we also fail to provide a lot of the infrastructure that they need to do their work safely. So, you know, truckers need places to like pull over and sleep at night or go to the bathroom or like just do essential human things. And what you see, you know, arising is like towns saying, kind of NIMBYism, right? Towns saying like, well, we don't want a truck stop because we think there's going to be crime there, or, you know, trucks can't drive on our roads, or truckers can't use the bathroom, stuff like that. And that's been going on, as you point out, for a long time. And I think we are only now like starting to see some folks in Washington start to recognize that like that is not a way to treat an industry that we desperately need.
And so with Washington getting involved, that kind of brings us to the surveillance that you talk so much about in your book. Instead of regulating the industry to pay their workers and to give them lodging, bathrooms, like you describe, there has been a different approach that's been taken. And it's quite troubling. And also, this is cross industry, essentially, this kind of worker digital surveillance that we're seeing, but it's more pronounced because of the conditions of this industry that we laid out previously. Talk a bit about the rise in the surveillance technology in the trucking industry.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the biggest kind of most pervasive and longstanding problems in the industry is fatigue, right? So truckers are by and large paid by the mile that they drive. They get like a, you know, a certain number of cents per mile. And so they're only paid for the time that they're actually moving, right? So they're very much incentivized to stay on the road as much as they possibly can. They don't get paid to sleep. They don't get paid while they're waiting to be loaded or unloaded or while they're doing an inspection or any of the other things that like are definitely part of the job, but they're just not compensated. So they're incentivized to do all this work. And because of that, because that's the compensation structure in the industry, and because, as you point out, right, like these are folks who are severely undercompensated for their labor, you know, there's a drive, there's an incentive to drive as much as you can because that's what you have to do to kind of keep the lights on at home, right, or to feed your kids. In response to that problem, right, there are federal rules that limit how much truckers can drive. And instead of kind of addressing these root causes of overwork and the fact that a lot of people were kind of violating those rules pretty regularly, the federal government has, since 2017, required truck drivers to be electronically monitored to kind of, and the goal is, right, to make sure that they're complying with these timekeeping rules. Before that, they used paper and pencil logbooks, and kind of nobody took those requirements very seriously because they had to put food on the table. So the goal, so the approach then has sort of been like almost like policing, right, to kind of institute the surveillance to know, you know, where truckers are and what they're doing, how long they've been driving. So this is accomplished via what's called an electronic logging device, or ELD, which all truckers have to use. What's interesting about the ELD, well, there's a couple things. I mean, there's a whole book's worth of things about the ELD that I wrote. But, you know, one of the interesting things about it is, first, you know, as you point out, the approach is not let's actually solve these underlying root problems, which are economic. Let's instead kind of you know, use tech as like a band-aid on this problem, right? So we won't actually address the fact that like nothing, we haven't changed anything about how drivers are paid or like the fact that they have nowhere safe to pull over. Instead, we'll just kind of crack down on them via this digital monitoring. And then the other thing that's happened in trucking, and this ties in, I think, to your point, Emma, about kind of all kinds of workplaces being under more surveillance, is that the electronic logging device has kind of provided this backbone for truckers, the companies that truckers work for, their employers, to also then monitor them in a whole bunch of different ways, right? Like they already had to buy this device that's hardwired into the truck. So now that they had to buy that, like it's not that much of an extra cost to like monitor things like how much fuel the trucker is using or how hard he's braking or, you know, whether he's gone out of route or all kinds of things, even up to and including some, you know, pretty intimate like biometric monitoring. Cameras trained on the driver's face. Some of those have like use AI to detect if a driver's eyelids are fluttering or if his head is nodding because he's too tired. All kinds of stuff, right, is kind of entering the scene. And it's all like ornaments on a Christmas tree or something. Like the government was like, you have to buy a Christmas tree. And then, you know, the trucking companies and third parties that are also interested in this data to kind of hang the ornaments of additional surveillance on the Christmas tree, right? So now truckers are kind of under a bunch of different eyes all at once.
I mean, what I would do if I were in that situation, if I was a trucker, would be I'd try to get it like an Adderall prescription. I mean, seriously, right? And
yeah. Yeah.
You talk about how the usage of stimulants, it was a real issue. And I mean, mm-hmm. this is kind of a second order, but it is important that to know that this has been a problem in the industry because that's the only way that truckers can stay awake and do their jobs to that extent.
Yeah, no, it's a really good point, right? And this is a long-standing problem, right? Like truckers have been kind of under the gun to do their work under all kinds of conditions. They're inhospitable or that kind of stretch the limits of what their bodies can do. And they've used all kinds of different solutions to address that, including, you know, sometimes illegal stimulants or illegal stimulants, stuff like 5-hour energy, things like that are really common. And I think like what that demonstrates, because this is so longstanding, is that again, like these are not technology problems, right? Like these are economic problems. We've decided that the way to deal with this is to stretch people past their limits and or to kind of, you know, surveil them so that we can make some inference about how tired they are, rather than just like paying them for the actual hours that they work, for example, so that they're not forced to kind of exploit their own labor.
I mean, that is it's deeply troubling, and it is indicative of a larger philosophy of technology solving all that I think it's a problem across multiple sectors. We encounter it, I think, when we talk about the ways that algorithms can filter out, you know, hateful content when it comes to social media companies and stuff. And there's this almost like godlike quality that people ascribe to technology, like it's going to fix everything, when really mm-hmm. a lot of this is just this creates more pressure on drivers when they don't need it, and two, this can be solved by simple solutions where we don't have to have all of this digital monitoring. You just increase wages, don't make it tethered to their time on the road, and put in place the protections that you describe.
Yeah, I mean, I agree completely. I think we often use technology as like duct tape or something, right? We're like, well, we could solve this problem, you know, but doing so like upsets the balance of power in some way, right? Like requires that, you know, power be redistributed, or that, you know, wages be fairly significantly you know, increased for particular laborers. And because of that, you know, it's appealing for policymakers to say like, oh, what about this like shiny thing? Like, won't this solve the problem? One of the things that's interesting in trucking is that, you know, if the problem that the logging device is supposed to be solving is like safety, right, or is fatigue, it isn't even doing that, right? So even on its own terms, it's kind of failing. The studies that we have show that since this technology became mandatory, truckers feel that the rules that they're under are so much more stringent, like the timekeeping rules are much more stringent, right? They used to have a little bit of wiggle room about, you know, kind of how they would report how long a trip took. And now they don't have that wiggle room. And so as a result, they drive faster, right? They drive more recklessly. They drive in conditions where they really shouldn't be driving, because like when the clock is over, it's over, right? Like they can't kind of twist it like the way they used to. So, you know, even if we accepted that technology might be a solution to an economic problem, it clearly doesn't seem to be in this case.
I'm wondering if you heard about the story of the Rajul Aguilera Menderos. I'm sorry if I'm butchering his name. I can see from...
You might have to keep me up to speed on that. I'm not
no,
sure
it's okay. It's just, this is a bit of an aside. I apologize. But he was a trucker, I think, in Colorado, who was sentenced to over 100 years in prison after his truck was... It killed some people on I-70.
Yeah.
It ended up getting reduced to 10 years. But in reading, you know, your book, that's what it reminded me of, which is just the idea that, I mean, he's going to bear the brunt of that as opposed to the people that he was working for. It's just another gut punch.
I didn't remember his name, but yes, I'm familiar with that situation. And I think that is, indicative of kind of this broader phenomenon, right? Which we see in all kinds of domains, not just in the workplace, where the risk is kind of still placed on the worker, on the person who has the least power to change things, right? And we sort of say like, well, we'll just watch you super closely and make sure you're doing all the things you need to be doing. But that, again, like doesn't change the fact that the things that they are told to do, and sometimes companies tell them to do it, right? Like many times in my research, a company would pressure a driver, would tell a driver like, yeah, you know, you shouldn't break the rules, but also like we need this stuff to move. So you sort of put drivers between a rock and a hard place where, you know, they're not able to make a living and they're doing this work that we tell them is really valuable, but we don't show them is really valuable by paying them for it. And then we add this monitoring on top of that, which, you know, I think many people are subject to more workplace monitoring than they used to be, but like truckers are really subject to it. Like it's pretty intense, the kind of scrutiny that they find themselves under. And a lot of us just wouldn't stomach it. And in trucking, actually, the folks who are the least likely to be okay with it are the safest drivers, right? Like the people who've been doing it for years or decades at a time. And, you know, like they're used to doing it their way, right? Like they're professionals, and you tell them like, guess what? We're going to like watch your eyelids now and tell you when you're too tired to drive. Like those are exactly the people you want behind the wheel. You want to be next to that truck on the highway. And those are the folks who are leaving because they're like, why should I do this? Like, why am I doing this?
Naturally. Right. What are some of the ways that the companies that aggregate this information, and that's a lot of information on your employees, do they sell it? What do they use it for outside of the ascribed purpose?
Yeah, they have all kinds of things that they do. So, you know, one thing that they do is the kind of like predictive analytics or workplace analytics that we see a lot of different companies doing. So, you know, before there was really no way to know like who is the best trucker. Like that doesn't even really make sense. Now, like truckers it still doesn't make sense, but like now we can score truckers. Like a lot of truckers get these scorecards that are issued like via this digital monitoring that give them some score. Oftentimes the companies all have different ways of doing it, but like a common thing is how much fuel they're using because that drives costs up. So they're really concerned about that. So they get some, you know, like employee of the month sort of thing, or they get ranked, you know, like several companies I talk to will rank drivers and show them the rankings or give them some little gift card or something if they are the most fuel efficient or they have the best safety record or whatever it is. And that is like, again, something a lot of workplaces do, but it's just so new in trucking, right? It really changes the way that truckers think about the independence of their work. And then another thing that companies do is they'll try to make predictions. So sometimes they'll try to predict, you know, which driver is going to leave, or like I had one guy tell me like, oh, you know, if the driver starts his days later, that might be a sign he's like going through a divorce or something, right? Like they try to like look for kind of big data insights, you know, when like they could just talk to the drivers, right? Yeah. And find out if they're doing okay. But then, you know, business analytics. And then there's also kind of our data grabs by third party companies. So insurers, of course, are interested in all this data about truckers and where they are and how they're driving. There are other companies that try to sell like parking spots, for example, right? Like truckers need to be able to reserve parking spots to sleep. And there are companies that will sort of use this data from the logging that we now have about all these drivers around the country to kind of price out parking spots and, like, you know, allow truckers to reserve those spots, things like that, right? So there's a lot of value to be derived from this data, but, like, very little of that value is actually seen by the workers themselves.
Right. And you also just speak about how the truckers, in this case, are canaries in the coal mine for larger electronic surveillance and other industries. And I'm hoping we can zoom out and talk about that as well. I think Amazon and their proposal for zapping bracelets if you're too idle made the rounds in the news. But there are keystroke trackers at office jobs. If you're typing, you got to be typing a sufficient amount of time, et cetera. This is happening in many different sectors. Throughout your research, what were some of the examples you found in the trends?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right that it's, you know, especially post-pandemic and kind of the new work landscape that involves more hybrid work, these things are just rolling out like crazy in all kinds of industries. You know, you mentioned warehouse work, factories, like a lot of what people think of as blue collar labor have dealt with these things for a long time, but they are also rolling out across kind of more professionalized industries like medicine and law and finance and things like that. So they really are sort of coming for everyone. There was a New York Times article not long ago about productivity tracking. And one of the examples, one of the people that they talked to who was subject to this kind of gamification of their labor was like a hospice chaplain who got some number of points for like how many visits she made to dying people. I mean, it was just like a wild example.
Chaplain?
It was, yeah. It's like someone who, you know, tends to people as their dying.
You got to measure the chaplain's productivity.
You know, like how many points was that worth? So
how many,
you know,
God points?
So, you know, I really think you're hard pressed to find industries or professions that aren't facing this in some way. And, you know, I think it's definitely something to continue to be on the lookout for. It's also important to recognize that, like, there's a long history to this stuff. So the goals of management are not that different today than they were, you know, 100, like in the Industrial Revolution, right? Like workers have been monitored and watched for the sake of productivity or efficiency for decades or centuries, right? But there are some things that are changing now, including, you know, reaching out to kind of new workplaces, right? So truckers, you couldn't have done this kind of work 20 years ago, because like if a trucker wanted to talk to their manager, they would go to the payphone when they felt like it and call the dispatcher, right? Like there was no knowing what they were doing most of the time. You know, and then the types of analytics that companies will sort of run, especially predictive analytics to try to make predictions about like what, you know, what their workers are likely to do. Those are fairly new developments. And another thing I think has been really interesting, actually a student told me about this, is the use of like, companies keeping an eye on what their workers are doing either on social media or like on LinkedIn to kind of get a sense for like, are they planning on leaving or, you know, are they sprucing up their resume or something like that, which, you know, I think potentially crosses a line, which is the kind of thing that an employer, you know, really ought not to do. But we see more of those types of things too, services that are marketed to big companies saying like, oh, now, you know, we'll keep an eye on your employees' LinkedIn profiles so you can get a sense for whether they're going to leave, stuff like that. So, you know, yeah, it is a really pervasive phenomenon. And truckers are maybe kind of at the bleeding edge of some of the things we're seeing.
What do you feel that there's a role for some of these like major consulting firms in pushing these practices on these companies? Like I could see a place like McKinsey aggregating this information and spreading it throughout different sectors just because they're hired guns and they'll be like, look at how they cut costs or look at how they monitor their labor in this way.
Yeah, I think that's a smart point. I think there is always a desire to quantify and measure what people are doing. And oftentimes what we fail to kind of account for is that like some things are just hard to measure, right? So you can pretty easily measure how many emails somebody sends or like how many minutes they have a document open or whatever. Like you can figure that out. But you can't as easily track whether, you know, you have a really meaningful conversation with your colleague or you have some great idea or whatever it is, right? Like things that are actually probably more meaningful about work are, you know, they're just harder to measure. And that doesn't often stop us from still, you know, kind of like wanting to spit out some number or some score for people, right? And I think you're right that is kind of in alignment with the managerial consulting perspective on the world. But it's just a poor fit for a whole bunch of different kind of work, including trucking work and, you know, just a whole bunch of different industries folks are in. I think you'd actually be hard pressed to find an industry where, like, you could easily, like, enumerate all of the things they do and just count them, right? Like, there's a lot of kind of, you know, soft work or wiggle room around the tasks that people do that is really important, but it's hard to track.
We have some people writing in with questions for you, so I was hoping you could respond to them.
Okay.
Prairie Fire Kowalski, our good friend Kowalski, wrote in saying, could you ask your guests if state laws like in Nebraska that allow farmers to drive semi-trucks without a CDL for farm use has impacted wages or safety?
That is a good question. I don't have a lot of intimate knowledge about that law in particular. But yeah, we do see some variation across states. So the long haul industry that I've been looking at are, these are folks who are driving like more than, I think it's more than 100 miles or more than 150 miles from their base routinely, right? So the folks that you're talking about are not kind of covered by some of these monitoring rules, but we do see states kind of actually adopting some of these things. So in California, for example, which is obviously a big state, we're starting to see California law talk about maybe implementing some of the same monitoring capabilities. Not really an answer to the question, but there is some kind of back and forth between the states and the feds on these.
Gotcha. Well, I mean, really fascinating discussion. I'm trying to think if I have one more question for you, because I feel like I do, but it's the time of year where everything
I'm with
leaves
you.
My brain.
I'm right there.
Someone wrote in also, Teamster John says, these pressures on drivers to extend the dock leading us to damage freight or worse, overload trailers. That's a good point as well. Is that something you found as well, that they're having to overload their trucks in order to make sure that they're carrying as much as possible?
That's really, I had not heard that, but that's really interesting. And if, yeah, and at the ports, I could definitely see that that might be something that comes up.
Gotcha.
So I don't know. I'll look into that.
Well, your book is great. Really encourage people to pick it up. Late holiday gift. If you procrastinated, like we all do on that front, Karen Levy, data-driven truckers technology and the new workplace surveillance. Thanks so much for your time today, Karen. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's been fun.
Of course. All right. Well, with that, a bit of an earlier fun half, but I don't care.
No, this is actually the time that we typically are supposed to get.
We should be.
Yeah, no, we've gone pretty late with some of our first hours last 2 weeks. So
it's profit. The profit motive, pressure on truckers, pressure on podcast producers.
Yeah,
too as well.
I mean, I hope we're not electrically monitored for doing a 50-minute first hour.
Sam, we're electrically monitored. Everybody sees, like, we start the show at 12:05. We hear about it from a whole bunch of people trying to discipline labor.
I know, honestly. Why do you guys work for the bosses in the YouTube chat when you're crapping on us?
Volunteering to crack the whip. Come on, guys.
I mean, yeah. Stop being such simps for power. Anyway, with that, yeah, we will head into the fun half. We'll be taking your calls, reading your IMs. Matt, what's happening on Left Reckoning?
Yeah, Left Reckoning. Check out our conversation with Xander Corvus and Summer Hart about porn stars' view on things like workplace safety and free speech. Also, on January 22nd at the Cutting Room, Left is Best New York, featuring Jason Miles, This is Revolution, Ben Burgess of Give Them an Argument. Get your tickets. There as well will be Sam Cedar and Emma Vigeland. So you'll want to be in attendance at the first show I've ever done, at least, in Manhattan. Get your tickets. We should put the link maybe in the comment description.
Yes.
Or the YouTube description here. So look for that, folks. And buy tickets.
Definitely. Sam and I, both there. It'll be a good time. I'm looking forward to it. On ESVN today, we're going a little bit early. Doing an earlier show. I have a commitment to do something. Anyway, it's just the holiday season, lots of family stuff. So we gotta do ESPN a little bit early.
Hopefully
today.
That family member is not watching.
Yes. No, I mean, it's fine. It's just, I'm, I'm tired. I'm already tired from the holiday season. Lots of stuff I got to do. But soon it shall be over, and then I will relax next week. That'll be great. YouTube.com/ESVN show. Bradley and I will be making our picks against the spread for a Christmas edition of the NFL. It's been a great competition between us. Bradley went 3-0 last week, but I went 2-1. It's that time of year where I start to heat up, but Bradley's hotter right now, unfortunately. Still a close competition. Check that out, YouTube.com/ESVN show. And it's not advice, but it is, we've been hot lately, both with our picks. So YouTube.com/ESVN show. All right. Oh, and also check out Doomed Scam Economy, Matt Binder's two shows on YouTube.com/Matt Binder. I was on Doomed on Tuesday, so you can check that out. And Scam Economy should be tonight.
A year in review?
Yeah, it was. But mostly we talked about Binder being banned.
All right. Well, yeah. I mean, that's the only thing that really happened.
Yeah, exactly. So check that out. And then, of course, Scam Economy, Brandon's wonderful show. All right, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
No, oh, no.
Are you ready?
Oh, yeah. Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Boy is back, and the alpha males are back, back.
Just as delicious as you could imagine.
The alpha males are back, 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 back. Boy is back, and the alpha males are back, 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 back.
Just wanna degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back.
I take all of it to my throat.
Alpha males are back, 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 back.
Snowflake says what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman!
And the alpha males are back, back.
Oh no, Sam Cedar! What a wow! What a fucking nightmare! What a fucking
nightmare! Can you bring back DJ Dinner?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Dinner.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough for the break.
That's fucking nonsense.
You see, white people doing drugs that look worse than normal white people, and all white people look disgusting.
And the alpha males,
psych, fuck them, fuck them.
Snowflake says what?
What?
Snowflake says what?
A hell of a lot of bang. A hell of a lot of bang. A hell of a lot of bang. Okay. I'm making stupid money. Hell of a lot of bang. A hell of a lot of bang.
All lives matter. Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 African. And the alpha males are black, 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 black. And the Africans are back, 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 back.
When you see Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keeping it 100. Can't knock the hustle. Come on! Fuck them. Fuck them.
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday!
My birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are black, black. Africans are back, back.
Come on!
Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy.